Neurobiology has had tremendous success in mapping the brain and understanding its component parts. The process is fascinating and its results most interesting. Yet even here, the part of the brain in which consciousness resides, if there is such a place, remains controversial. Some have suggested the cerebellum, some the reticular formation, some the hippocampus. Despite this lack of agreement, there seems to be a broadly shared assumption among neuroscientists that consciousness can be explained in terms of neurobiological processes. Underlying this assumption is the confidence that all mental states, both cognitions and sensations, can be correlated to processes in the brain. With the invention of new powerful instruments, neuroscientists' knowledge of the correlation between various cognitive activities and brain processes has reached truly astonishing levels. For example, at one of the Mind and Life conferences, the psychologist Richard Davidson presented a detailed description of how many of the negative emotions, such as fear and hate, appear to be intimately associated with a part of the brain called the amygdala. The association between these emotional states and that part of the brain is so strong that in patients whose brains have been damaged in that region, emotions like fear and apprehension are said to be absent. I remember making the observation that if experiments conclusively demonstrated that neutralizing that part of the brain would have no damaging consequences to the individual, then excising the amygdala could prove to be a most effective spiritual practice. Of course, the situation is not that simple. It turns out that in addition to providing a neural basis for our negative emotions, the amygdala has other important roles to play, such as detection of danger, without which we would become incapacitated in many ways. Despite the tremendous success in observing close correlations between parts of the brain and mental states, I do not think current neuroscience is any real explanation of consciousness itself. Neuroscience can probably tell us that when activity can be observed in this or that part of the brain, the subject must be experiencing such and such a cognitive state. But it leaves open the question of why this is so. Furthermore, it does not and probably could not explain why, when such and such a brain activity occurs, the subject undergoes such and such an experience. For example, when a subject perceives the color blue, no amount of neurobiological explanation will get to the bottom of the experience. It will always leave out what it feels like to see blue. Similarly, a neuroscientist may be able to tell us whether a subject is dreaming, but can a neurobiological account explain the content of a dream? A distinction can be made, however, between this as a methodological suggestion and the metaphysical assumption that mind is no more than a function or emergent property of matter. But assuming mind is reducible to matter leaves a huge explanatory gap. How do we explain the emergence of consciousness? What marks the transition from non-sentient to sentient beings? The model of increasing complexity based on evolution through natural selection is simply a descriptive hypothesis, a kind of euphemism for mystery, and not a satisfactory explanation.